There will also be face painting and music by Pete Krebs. Again, that's the Coley Neighborhood Farmers Market, Thursday, July 11th from 4 to 8 p.m. at 5011 Northeast 42nd Avenue at Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up next on Words and Pictures, they look at Canopy Stories, a project that features 12 films by 11 filmmakers, each telling the unique story of a single urban tree. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Dark Side Cinema, open every night and featuring independent foreign and art house films. The Dark Side is located at 215 Southwest 4th Street between Madison and Jefferson Avenues in Corvallis, Oregon. More information and showtimes is available online at darksidecinema.com.
Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And today we're talking about local films and local trees. Dave Hedberg is in the studio. He's an environmental historian and the consultant on the Canopy Stories project. Canopy Stories is a sprawling two-part documentary series about urban trees, 12 short films about 12 local trees directed by 11 filmmakers. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
And Dave is joined by four other filmmakers: Sam Gady, Zoe Geringer, James Kurzmarzik, and Jesse Andrew Clark. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I want to mention Dave is also the creative mind between the two features that bookend Canopy Stories. Those are the films Rose's Tree and Heroes and Villains. First introduce Sam Gady. He is the executive director of Northwest Documentary. He's also the filmmaker behind the short film Tree Death. And Sam, what can you tell me about Northwest Documentary and their involvement with bringing this project to the big screen?
Yeah, Northwest Documentary is an arts nonprofit that teaches and supports documentary filmmaking. And we had the idea of creating an anthology film series where we invited filmmakers to collaborate by contributing short documentaries about a central subject. So this is actually our first effort in this area, and it turned out, I think, much better than anyone expected. And so we intend to do more of this, and it's really meant to be an opportunity for filmmakers to kind of stretch their kind of creative muscles. A lot of times you work with clients and you end up making things that you don't get to make the films you want. And so this was a space for people to kind of make the film they wanted, and just give people the opportunity to really run with it.
And James Kurzmarzik, you're the director of 82nd and Verdant,
yes,
which is one of the short films. But you're also, well, you know, you had a big place in bringing this project from a, you know, hatching it from a seedling to what it is today.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I took a DIY documentary workshop at Northwest Documentary, and that's where the film that the Canopy Stories project, I guess, was kind of born out of. It was called Just Old Trees, and it centered around a property in Southwest Portland in Hillsdale that used to be the playground and workshop of Henry Dosh of Dosh Road, if anyone remembers or can, you know, knows where that's at in their mind. Henry Dosh was a horticulturalist, and he collected trees and he did experiments on trees. And the property passed eventually to his great grandson, who saved the house that his great grandfather built and was able to save many of the trees in a development that took place in order to raise the money to save the house. And so this property eventually turned into a wonderful neighborhood full of old and interesting types of trees. And so we just kind of, I profiled that in the short film.
And so the working title originally for the project, when it was at a very very low stage, that was what was the title again of the project?
Oh, that original DIY documentary piece that I made was called Just Old Trees.
And it's kind of grown into a pretty amazing production with, I mean, all of the, you know, you've gone out there with 4K cameras and drones and just done some incredible work with documentary footage of past actions and historical footage. It's really kind of grown into an amazing kind of sprawling thing.
Yeah, it's turned into something much more than I thought it would ever have been when I was making that initial short documentary.
So let's mention the Portland Circuit. This is a partnership between Oregon Film, that's a state agency that everybody should know about because it has done really important work about bringing production money and support to the state, and also four local cinemas, the Hollywood Theater, the Northwest Film Center, Cinema 21, and the Clinton Street Theater. The Northwest Film Center is going to be hosting tonight part two of the series. It's just going to have several of your films tonight. It's going to have 82nd and Verdant. It's going to have Jesse. It's going to have your film, The Lost Redwood.
That's right.
And Zoe's film, The Activist Tree. Zoe, tell us a little bit about your film.
Yeah, so my film is about the story of an Oregon white oak in southwest Portland that was actually saved in the 80s from being cut down. It's pretty dramatic. There's actually a scar in the tree, so you can see how close it was to being completely destroyed. So it's about that community's activism.
It was saved twice, I understand.
Yes, it was saved twice. And now it is in the hands of the parks. So.
And this is something that people can go and see nowadays. It's not on private property.
Yep, it's on Corbett and Lane, and it's actually a park. It doesn't look like a park. It looks just like a big oak, but you can go there and check it out. It's pretty beautiful.
Well, you're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm S.W. Conser. I'm here with several filmmakers from the documentary project Canopy Stories, and we have a clip for you now. It's from the film The Activist Tree by Zoe Geringer.
On the morning that we woke up, it was a really beautiful Saturday morning, 50 feet from here. And then we heard this, and I think I said, oh, they must be cutting the oak tree.
The Corbett oak took root in the 1700s, before America was a nation, and has witnessed the transformation of a wilderness. It has grown through wars, depressions, and intense urban growth. Four generations ago, an immigrant community that spoke over a dozen languages developed around the tree's location, creating South Portland, an historic area.
Now, this is not just touching on issues of environmentalism, of urban lifestyles. This is touching on historical issues, because the Oregon white oak, I actually have kind of a love for the Oregon white oak because I've spent a lot of time working in the craft spirits and wine industry, and the Oregon white oak used to be considered a weed tree when people came through looking for land to plow. All these oaks were in the way. They were like weed trees, and so, you know, nowadays they're a rarity, where there were whole oak savannas back in, you know, a century or two ago. Now they're prized because they have this tight grain that people use for wine barrels.
I did not know that. They're also a keystone species, so environmentally I know they're prized as well nowadays.
So this particular oak goes back over 200 years then?
Yeah, I think it's like 250 years old. It's an old oak. It's been here before Portland was here, so.
What's the importance, I'll ask this also of Dave, because you are the environmental historian and you've been consulting on all of this. What is the importance of keeping these really old trees intact and you know, their whole support system as well?
Yeah, so one of the things that's inspiring about these old trees, especially the Oregon white oaks, are that we have trees that are around, that were around before this place was ever called Portland. And so they really do speak to the indigenous people's land management of the Willamette Valley and the Portland Basin. And they really help remind us how short our history is in this place. And because of that, we can kind of look forward. and see what are we doing today. You know, we have trees that are 200 years old that are still around. What are we doing today to ensure that our great, 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 great grandchildren have some trees that inspire, you know, that will inspire them?
And let's talk to a little bit about that, because I mean, I don't think people realize that there was land management going on before there were European settlers in the area, but that's exactly what was going on in the valley. There was management of the grasslands, of the savannas, in the forests.
Yeah, that's,
there was management as well up here along the Columbia, along the Willamette.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. The Willamette Valley is not an accidental landscape. It was very intentionally managed by indigenous peoples, and they burned to keep this open grass savanna. And in doing that, they had a whole host of foods for themselves. It encouraged game. It really created an environment that was central to their culture. And so, you know, you see these old romantic paintings of the Pacific Northwest, and they tend to, you know, project this landscape that's peopleless and an environment that seems like a wilderness. And the problem with that is that, you know, these landscapes were intentionally managed by indigenous people, and our kind of art history has driven this narrative that indigenous people weren't on the landscape and they didn't contribute to it. And so the trees help us remind us that that's not the case.
I want to play another clip now. You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm SW Conser. We have another clip from Canopy Stories. This one is from the film The 7,000 Tree of Dharma Rain by Christopher Beyer.
This is a Oregon white oak, and it's the dominant tree in the ecosystem that we're aiming for here. If you are kind of in the Willamette Valley and you're kind of driving through like old farmland, you'll see these big round versions of these that are 100 feet tall that, you know, take up all kinds of space. And those are 250, 300 years old. So this is only 7 or 8 years old. It'll be a long time before it gets that kind of spread, but we've planted a bunch of these here, and hopefully this will be here a very long time.
So again, that's the Oregon white oak, but it's a reinstatement of what has gone before, and folks who are trying to find the right place for native species, as well as, you know, I mean, not every, yeah, it's always a little fuzzy to be talking about what's a native species, because things always change. But with that in mind, let's talk about a story that's been much in the news lately. There's a study that's come out of Zurich, the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology. Study's co-author is Thomas Crowther, and he claims that the best way to combat climate change is to plant a trillion trees. That's a one with 12 zeros after it. And he has mapped out all the areas where those trees could thrive. And urban areas are a big part of the plan. Actually, James, 82nd and Verdant, your film, touches in part on urban tree planting, on the plight of underserved communities, how they've in the past gotten a bit shortchanged when it comes to tree planting.
Yeah, well, I mean, so many of the neighborhoods in Portland that we think of having these grand tree canopy landscapes, like Irvington, Laurelhurst, and all parts of the West Hills, they were the older parts, and they were often the more affluent parts of the city. My film 82nd and Verdant centers in the Jade District, and
we'll mention the Jade District. It's so called because that's where a lot of the new Asian immigrants are moving. There's the traditional Chinatown in the northwest part of Portland in Old Town, but in the southeast, this is where you get a lot of folks who are, you know, Vietnamese, Korean, Hmong, Thai.
Correct.
And there's a new center where actually the Apano Center, which only went up in the last couple of years. And your story is largely centered there.
Yeah, there's a new building, Orchards on 82nd, and it's low-income housing and a community center, and sponsored in part by Apano and the Rose Development. That's one aspect of many changes and plans that APANO, the Asian Pacific American Network organization, and their partners have kind of come up with for that part of town to improve the built landscape for the people who live there. And another aspect was planting trees. It's a part of town that doesn't have a lot of trees. It's right next to major thoroughfares, I-205, Division 82nd. It's got a high amount of air pollution and a high rate of asthma. And so one of the things that came out of some of the planning and discussions that they had there was that something we could do right away is plant trees. And it's not by any means the only solution to many of the issues being faced in that part of town, but it's a part of it.
And you talk, one of the people that you talk with, or she's kind of a she's kind of the central person in the film.
Correct.
She's a big believer that trees are a part of a whole sort of network for livability and for making neighborhoods more vital.
Yeah, Carol Lee, who was a volunteer at APANO at the time, and now she works with APANO, went about calling businesses in the area, businesses, property owners, asking them if they would be willing to plant a tree in their on their property because that part of town did not get wasn't incorporated into the city of Portland until the 1980s. Development kind of just happened as it happened. And so there wasn't a lot of planning for parks, for street trees, for that sort of thing. And so a big part of the project was just asking people, hey, can we cut some concrete maybe and plant a tree and give you some support in keeping this tree healthy and vital?
Now, I know that the struggles that people come up against in those areas of the East County, they're very complex, but what are some of the moving parts that are especially challenging out there?
Some of the moving parts in regard to like planting trees?
Yeah, and in regards to getting an urban landscape that has a tree canopy.
Yeah, well, part of it is just the planning that happened. There's streets that just don't have planting strips like many of the older neighborhoods in Portland. And so you can't simply just plant a tree in the sidewalk because people need to move down the sidewalk and there isn't enough room. Another aspect is for a lot of the people, I've been told, for some of the people in that part of town, they have other priorities. That part of town is one of the most diverse parts of town, and it isn't only just people who have come from Asia. There are lots of Eastern European immigrants, Latin American immigrants. There's a pretty large Somali community there, and a lot of the people in that part of town are working their focus is on their family and improving their own personal lives. And, planting a tree and taking care of a tree and managing a tree, that's kind of, it's not the focus. And it takes some conversations to make that happen.
And then, of course, there are city regulations. I understand that even when you do have a strip along the sidewalk, if it's less than 3 feet wide, they keep you from planting a tree there unless it's a really simple, like crabapple or a rosebush or something.
Yeah, that's a newer ordinance. I think Dave can probably speak to that better than I can. But my understanding is that the city doesn't want that happening just because they can destroy some sidewalks.
Yeah, access to trees and equity is a real concern for the future of our urban canopy. And as James just said, like as you go to these areas in East Portland, there's just less space, and there's just going to be more kind of conflicts between us needing to widen our streets, build sidewalks, have bus stops, and so space is a premium, and especially in East County, and so it's. There's just less space to plant a big tree.
Yeah, and speaking of space, well, some people, one of the point of contention that's been going around lately is that the Oregon legislature just recently kind of signed a blank check for developers in the state, and they're allowed to increase density all over big cities in Oregon with no real guarantee that those new housing units are going to be affordable and no real plan to protect the old trees that are constantly in the developers' crosshairs.
Yeah, that's, I mean, one of the upsetting things about being in the tree community is that we often get pitted against developers. And so there's, I do believe though that it's kind of a false dichotomy. We don't have to have, we don't have to be against developers. So there are plenty of developers around who retain trees and design around them and incorporate them into their projects. And so we know that trees actually have real tangible benefits. They have emotional benefits. And so we don't have to be against developers. We just need to be more collaborative and creative.
Well, Sam, this is actually relevant to your film, Tree Death. And it's a counterpoint. Tree death is a bit of a counterpoint to some of the celebratory stories in the series. You visit a tree that's over 150 years old. It's called the Paradox Walnut. And I can remember when that tree was threatened with the axe. A big townhouse project was planned for the foot of Mount Tabor. The site happens to be in a bit of a hollow. And the neighbors did convince the developer to build around the Paradox Walnut rather than cut it down, largely by pointing out that the tree's roots did a great job of sucking up all the water runoff that would otherwise be flooding the area during our long rainy season.
Yeah, and it was a surprise because it was intended, as I was making the film, to be kind of a happy ending. And we were going to go see this kind of positive outcome. And I was working with an arborist who was the central subject of the film. He hadn't visited the tree since it was had been designated as a heritage tree. And so when we went to visit it, he kind of experienced the loss of this tree on camera for the first time. And so the whole film took a turn. It ended up being tree death when it might not have been that otherwise.
Yeah, a little sad ending of the story. So we'll see what happens to the property now that the Paradox Walnut is down. I'd like to run one more clip here that's really relevant to this topic. You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm S.W. Conser. And this clip is from the short film Giants by Luz Carasa. Many of our listeners will remember the very recent struggle that this film documents.
I just started like texting everyone I could. I felt like every minute counted at that point because if enough people stood underneath the trees, they weren't going to be able to cut them down. People started showing up.
I took a lawn chair and went and sat under the trees.
We went around the side of the fence and went and stood in front of the tree.
They stood underneath the trees and they didn't move. They couldn't start limbing the trees with people standing under there. They called the police.
I just want everybody who's here to realize that you are actually trespassing. This is private property and that it is an arrestable offense. And so what we're going to do is we're just going to come around and get everybody's names and information so that we know who we're talking to and we can document that you've been warned and that you've been given the option to leave. And then if you return, that you understand that you could be arrested.
And I was like, all right, I guess we're getting arrested today.
He said, if the developer asks, we'll have to arrest you. And I said, well, I'm 65, I've never been arrested, and it's sort of on my bucket list.
And Vic never showed up.
They're not cutting the trees down right now, they're gonna go and regroup. So whatever you all choose to do, however you choose to leave, okay. At this point, if your goal was to not have them cut the trees down today, you could call it a victory if you choose to.
The trucks went away, the crew went away, and we kind of all celebrated because the trees had lived another day.
But that really was the declaration of war.
That clip is from Giants by Luz Carasa. It follows a struggle that got much coverage in the local press back in 2015. The Vic that's mentioned there is Vic Remmers, the owner of Everett Customs Homes, which has bought a whole lot of lots in the city, including a double lot in East Moreland that had three sequoia redwoods, really, really tall trees back in the 2014-2015 time period. This resulted in some changes to Portland city codes, although some tree advocates feel that those changes didn't go far enough. Dave Hedberg, what can you tell us about this?
Yeah, so one of the inspiring things about Luz's film is that it really shows us how those activists helped change the city code. And so they established a higher, what they call a fee in lieu of preservation. And so, you know, that developer was going to pay like $1,200 to remove those trees. And, you know, after this this event, the code changed, and so you know it was upwards of several thousand, maybe even more than $40,000 now. One of the things about that, though, is that that code amendment is going to eclipse at the end of this year, and so we're really also trying to encourage people to get in touch with City Council and let them know that we have an opportunity here to actually strengthen our tree code even further with that, and not let those code amendments eclipse fully.
So how can people get involved in that process and find out more about the process?
Yeah, so I mean, you can get involved by going to the Urban Forestry Commission meetings. And if you go to Portland Parks Urban Forestry, you can learn about the Urban Forestry Commission meetings. You can also send an email to our council, and that's probably one of the best ways to get involved. And you can also, you know, get in touch with us at the Canopy Stories film, and we can help direct you too.
Well, one of the things that became part of the controversy back in Eastmoreland was that the sequoias weren't considered native to the Northwest. They're considered more of a California tree. But of course, as the climate changes, some of those trees are coming north. And let's talk quickly to Jesse Andrew Clark, the director of The Lost Redwood, because this is not a native tree to the Northwest that is the subject of your film, but has become a very important part of Oregon's story.
That's right. And it's actually kind of surprising that the tree actually was native to North America up until about 5 million years ago. It went extinct at that point, largely because of the receding glaciers, the changing climate at the time. So it's kind of an interesting parallel to see the effect of the climate on a tree back then, and then to see how the tree can thrive in different areas nowadays. The redwoods are pretty hungry for water, and the dawn redwood especially. But it's actually a really stout, small tree. It's only about 150 feet at its fully mature state. And it's very responsive to its environment, not only looking for water actively, but really, really changing and reflecting the seasons. It's the only deciduous redwood. So, we think of redwoods as evergreens. They're always big and tall, these pillars on the landscape. But in the autumn season, if you see a redwood-looking tree with sort of pine needles, that's bright orange and just dumping them everywhere. It's not dying. It's likely a dawn redwood. So be careful where you plant them.
So this has another big part in the Oregon story. It has an official designation.
That's right. So in 2005, the tree's fossil record was actually made the official state fossil of Oregon. And that was largely due to the efforts of a paleobotanist named Mackenzie Smith, who currently is a paleobotanist in Florida, I believe. But it turned out he actually was going to be on Christmas break in Portland, so I was able to interview him about his experience and the tree, of course. So in 2005, he led his whole fifth grade class down to Salem to testify on behalf of this bill that was sponsored.
And there's an adorable pupil who's testifying before the legislature in your film.
That's Mackenzie.
Right. Well, you'll be able to see that tonight if people have the evening free and want to get down to the Portland Art Museum's Witzel Auditorium. The film series is Canopy Stories. It's been playing at various cinemas as part of the Portland Circuit Partnership. Part two of Canopy Stories, again, screening this evening. Dave Hedberg, Sam Gady, what can you tell us about this project, and how can our listeners find more about this screening, future screenings, other documentary projects that are coming through NW Doc, Northwest Documentary?
Yeah, so to learn specifically about Canopy Stories, you can go to canopystoryfilm.com. There'll be a list of upcoming screenings, and we're also making the films available to community organizations that want to start conversations about trees. So if you'd like to host a screening of the films, you should reach out to us. And then Northwest Documentary is a resource for anyone with a story, and you can go to nwdocumentary.org to learn more, or just drop into our office. We love it when people walk in the door.
Nwdocumentary.org and canopystoriesfilm.com. You've been listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm SW Conser. Thanks to all our guests today, Dave Hedberg, Sam Gady, Zoe Geringer, James Kurzmarzik, and Jesse Andrew Clark. Thank you so much, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks also to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration. And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. The audio for this show will be available later today on our archive page, kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And you can keep up with us on Twitter, @wordsandpicture.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Tuesday of each month